with the Business Bunker.
Welcome to the Business Bunker Show on KentBusinessRadio.co.uk on this Tuesday, the 14th of April. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and a stonkingly gorgeous Jill Serkin.
Hello, Mr. Andrews.
Hello.
I got here by the skin of my teeth today.
Yeah, you were late.
Well, you know why.
No, why?
You'd had the whole road closed off, hadn't you?
Oh, I've got to stop you coming here somehow.
Direct from Canterbury to Hythe. Was completely, you know, when you see signs saying road closed,
yeah,
you don't believe it, do you? You think, oh, I'll be able to squeeze
you don't
through.
Believe it. Yeah,
I
yeah.
thought I'll be able to sit. And I kept sitting, I kept motoring along, and the road was suspiciously empty.
Was it,
listener? Yes, and I saw another sign, road closed. Another sign ran. I thought, nah.
And you ignored them all.
I said, they can't possibly
you thought
close this.
They did that just to fool me.
I've got to get to Business Bunker, so I carried on, and then got there, and there was pipes and lorries, and couldn't get through. And so I ended up doing a little U-turn.
A U-E? You did a little U-E,
little
did you?
U-E.
A little U-E,
yeah.
Did you?
Very, very well, I might say, just in, you know, one turn. And then I...
No. You, no.
And I never realised, Paul Andrews and listener, how much countryside there is around Bossington or Bossington.
Where?
I don't even know where I
where
was.
Where were you?
I don't know.
France?
No. Off Stone Street somewhere. You get in the wilderness.
Blimey.
And I went round and my sat-nav got in a flat. Anyway, I got here, listener.
Cool.
I got here by the skin of my teeth.
Sorry about that, she got here.
And we had a fabulous scoff and quaff. We had pies, we had beans.
Is that your phone keep buzzing?
Might be.
Yeah. Turn it off.
I put it on the carpet now.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. Now, who might our sponsor be this week?
Today's sponsor is actually also our guest today, which is rather nice.
Yes.
So it's an absolute pleasure to once again be sponsored by Information Protection Solutions, who are going to tell us all about what they do later on in the show.
Yes.
But basically, IPS help you dispose of your sensitive data, I think is the best way of saying that. But
very
we're going
good.
To talk to Derek later in the show and find out more about
a
what they do.
A little bit more than shredding, I think.
Nobody mentioned shreddies.
Well, what I do, shredding. No, shredding, you know.
Oh, shredding, sorry.
Yeah, I do that.
Well, like cabbage and stuff.
No, not just cabbage. Did you see my salsa I made last night?
Your what?
My salsa.
Your salsa. Why would I have seen your salsa last night?
I tweeted it out. I thought it was
really... Oh, sorry. I hang on your every... On your every tweet.
Well, you do tend
I sat at home about 9 o'clock last night and I'm wondering... I wonder if Jules is knocking up anything in her kitchen and tweeting pictures of it. Do you know what? I'll have a look.
Well, as you were doing the Zumba...
Yeah.
The Zumba.
Zumba. Yeah.
I thought you might be interested in salsa. Get it?
Ho, 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 ho.
Ho,
ho, ho, ho. Ho, 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 ho.
Yes.
Oh, that was a good joke.
I
not.
Know. And who else is on the show?
Oh, we got a packed lineup of people today.
Standing room.
Yeah, and as we go through, we will be talking about all the people that are on the show and introducing them.
So you're
one
refusing
at a time.
To tell me now?
Yeah, well, we're gonna do it one at a time, as we always do and have done for the last 7 years. I've never ever told you the guests in advance.
Can't you give me
in
a
7 years of doing this show?
Something squirrely, perhaps?
We might have.
Yeah.
We might have. And you're going to find out fairly shortly, because we're going to go to our first guest quite shortly.
A little bit of Jane Wildish, perhaps?
We could well have. We could well have. But for the moment, I just wanted to say to you, as we always do...
I haven't got any emails either.
Have I not given you any emails?
No.
Oh, I don't know.
We're very tardy today.
We're completely disorganised today. It's because you were late.
Do you know, listen, I had to come in and turn the aircon off as well. And then I got shouted at because I was in the wrong side of the studio.
Absolutely.
Being diligent, I was.
Absolutely. Go away.
I know.
I'll give you your emails in a minute,
right.
But we've had loads of tweets too. But if you'd like to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you out there, the businesses of Kent, and you can get in touch with us in all the normal ways. You can call us on 01303 874 998. That's 01303 874 998. Or you can email me at bunker@kentbusinessradio.co.uk. But by far and away, the easiest way to get hold of me is to tweet me at VanillaWeb. And we have already had a few hundred tweets in, and we will be reading some of those. I'll tell you what, Jules, have you got... you can read a couple of tweets if you like.
I will.
No, I'll tell you what, I'll read one.
All right, then. I'll just sit here.
Centros in Bromley have tweeted, and they're a new listener. And I don't know Centros, but they tweeted in, and they said, "Hi, Vanilla Web, we've got an April special. Laser hair removal." They're trying to be funny. They're trying to be funny.
You need that before your Zumba. There must be some coming out your nose or your ears or something.
They're trying to be funny. Centros Bromley have an April special laser hair removal from only £29, and you can find them on the Twitter. Centros Bromley is their Twitter handle, CENTROS.
But let's be frank
here.
Let's be frank here.
You can be frank.
when men
I'm
get
be Betty.
To
you be Frank, I'll be Betty. Yeah.
When men get to a certain age, they do, listener, get a little, you know, ear hairs, don't they, and things like that, and also coming out the nostrils, things like that. So perhaps they were being polite.
What are you trying to say about me?
Well, I'm just saying, perhaps they were being polite.
You're just saying?
Just saying.
Okay, yeah. Anyway.
We've also got Steve Kilfoyle of Squirrel on, listener, because I know listener's dying to know.
She's all excited about this.
Well,
I don't know why she's all excited
a bit
about this.
Imagine not telling us who they are first.
I never tell you who they are before I introduce them, and I'm going to introduce them in a moment.
Okay.
We've also had another new listener. We've got loads of new listeners this morning for some reason, this afternoon.
Yeah, we had a lot.
Providers in Maidstone.
What are they providing?
I think it's welfare to work, I think. I haven't really had a chance to investigate very much because I've only just seen them on the Twitter.
But I had a lovely picture from Adrian, AK Pet Services.
Oh, that's very nice.
He says he's listening in with Simon.
Simon's a what? A dog?
He's not just any dog, is he? He's like a little terrier. It looks is he a border terrier?
I don't know. That works on the radio, doesn't it? Show the listeners the photo.
Or is he a little cairn? What do you think, people in the studio? Shout out.
I'm sure.
I think he might be a little cairn or a little border.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for that, Adrian.
He's got a little mug of tea.
Yeah.
He needs a business bunker mouse mat, perhaps.
He probably does, yeah. Hey, listen, I promised to give a huge shout-out to the guys back at my place.
Oh, Fruitworks.
No, my house.
Oh, the builders.
The builders.
Have they done the kitchen?
They're 10 days away from finishing now.
I wouldn't mention them yet.
After 6 months of work.
Kitchen that bad?
No, it's that big. I've had a big extension built for those.
Do you have an RSJ?
Did I have an RSJ?
Yes.
What kind of question is that?
I'm doing my Ruffy Tuffy building talk.
Know what an RSJ is,
do
you? You wouldn't know the difference between a builder's crack and an RSJ, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I do. It's a long sort of metal thing that goes up to hold the ceiling up.
I have in fact got an RSJ, yes.
Thank you. Knew.
Yeah. Anyway, a massive, massive thank you to Melvin and the team from Potter's Kitchens and Bathrooms. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And also, I said I'd give a huge shout out to George and Sam of Cartel Electricians from Ashford.
Are they doing your electrics?
They were there yesterday doing my electrics, and they've embedded some Bluetooth speakers in the ceiling of my kitchen, which is lovely.
That is really good. You'll be able to listen to Business Bunker and Scoff and Quaff while you're cooking.
Well, that's not going to work, really, is it?
Why?
Well, because I'll be here doing Business Bunker and Scoff and Quaff.
No,
I can do the listen again, I suppose.
Again, of course.
If you want to do such things.
Yeah. While you're cooking.
Something like that. Anyway, we'd love to hear from you, the businesses of Kent. You can read us one email, because you've got them now.
Okay. Kent and Victor Chamber they have a full English breakfast, need I say more. This is at 8 a.m. To 9:30. It costs £15 plus VAT for Chamber members, and non-members are £20 plus VAT. Now, when are these said meetings? Wednesday the 15th of April at the Mercure Maidstone, which is at the Great Danes Hotel in Maidstone. And then also Thursday the 16th of April at Greenfield Shooting in Canterbury. That sounds like a new venue to me. Mm. Friday the 1st of May, it's at Salomon's Estate, which is Broomhill Road, Tunbridge Wells. And they have a guest speaker, listener, on Wednesday the 6th of May. And that's at the splendid Eastwood Manor Hotel in Ashford. And the guest speaker is Dylan Tompkins. Oh, I got excited. I thought it was Dylan Thomas for a minute. That would have been.
That would have been something, wouldn't it?
From the grave. Dylan Tompkins from Ames Financial Services. Now, he's going to be talking about pensions and auto-enrolment and what that might mean to you. So that sounds interesting.
Never heard of that.
No. Wednesday, 6th of May, Eastwood Manor. And then lastly, going on to May, if you want these for your diary, Tuesday the 19th of May at Chilston Park in Lenham, and Wednesday the 20th of May at Canterbury Cricket Club. So all of those details will be on kentbusinessradio.co.uk, but it's Kent in Victor Chambers.
Fantastic. Thank you for that.
And may I say, nicely read.
Was it?
I'm on my best behaviour today, can't you tell?
I should think so, after the trouble you got me into last week.
We will not even go there after the trouble I've had all week. Let's not go there.
I'm going to read one more tweet, and then we're going to talk to our first guests.
Fabulous.
We've had a tweet from Cars from Kent.com. It says, "Hi, Jules Serkin." Don't know why he's talking to you.
He loves me, darling.
Yeah. Hi, Jules and Paul. Shout out, please, on the Business Bunker show. If you're looking for a new car in Kent, check us out. Cars from Kent.com. Thank you. So do have a look at that if you are looking to buy or sell a car locally.
Oh, I was right. Little Simon is a border terrier.
Is he?
Yeah, they're lovely with children. Actually recommended by the Kennel Club, along with RSJs.
What, children?
No, the border. The Border Terrier recommended for children as perfect pets.
Really?
Yeah. Don't really like dogs much, I don't think, but they like children. Good, they're good pets. Border Terrier. Got quite long legs.
Right, okay.
And a whiskery face.
Okay.
You saw him, Simon.
Oh, right, that was a dog, was it?
Yeah.
Not the children?
No.
All right, okay.
You're really confusing me today.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, listen.
What's up?
I want to introduce our first guest.
I'd love to.
It would be really nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Monkey Show our first guest. We in our Federation of Small Business section, we asked the FSB to introduce us to someone that could give us a bit of an overview, and just an overview, about auto-enrolment, because it's one of those issues that a lot of small businesses kind of want to know about. And whilst we can't give out any specific information about that, obviously, we thought it'd be rather nice just to get an overview of what the whole auto-enrolment thing is about. So it's an absolute pleasure to be joined on the Business Bunker Show by Steve Kilfoy and Jane Wildish from Squirrel Financial Services. Hi, guys.
Hi. Hi.
Nice to meet you. First of all, just give us a flavour of what you can't do. So at the moment, you're not going to give us any specific advice or anything like that.
No, obviously, if you want to take any specific or ask specific questions, that's book an appointment to come and see us and we'll go through those specifics with you. Today's just an overview of what you can and can't do, what you must do and what you mustn't do. So yes, more of an overview.
Fantastic. So just generally then, no, you're absolutely right. So if you want any specific advice about this, you've got to go and speak to someone that's accredited to do that. But as a general overview, just give us a bit of background to what auto-enrolment is and who it affects.
Okay. Auto-enrolment was a piece of legislation put into force in 2008, came into effect in October 12. Largest companies went in first. But effectively, the rules that were implemented by the government are that an employer must offer a workplace pension.
Right.
If an employee contributes, the employer has to contribute too. There's the ability to claim tax relief, so you get some help from the tax man. And some employees will need to be auto-enrolled,
right,
rather than enrolled.
Okay.
And it depends on levels of earnings, those sorts of things.
Okay, well, maybe we can explore each of those in a little bit more depth. First question I want to ask, because I hear a lot of SMEs say this, you know, they go, oh, it doesn't affect me. As far as I know, if you employ anyone, you have to do an auto-enrolment. Is that the case?
You have to do something.
Yeah.
There are basically two or three steps you need to take. One is to get your staging date to understand when you will need to do something by.
And how does one go about doing that?
A number of different ways. Probably the easiest way is to go onto a website, which is the Pension Regulator website.
Right.
That's thepensionregulator.org.uk.
Yeah.
You'll need your PAYE reference number, which used to be on the front of your little yellow tax book. Put that in. And then effectively it will tell you your staging date.
Right.
On the website it says that you should give around about 12 months lead in time to actually get the scheme set up.
I think that's an important point as well though, Steve, isn't it? Because that's where a lot of people could fall down because they think, well, my staging date's not for 18 months. I haven't got to do anything.
Absolutely.
But in fact, it takes time to set these schemes up.
It does. Even the most basic auto-enrolment solution, which is probably the government scheme, they want a 2-month lead in time to get that ready.
Right.
So it's not something you can just turn up one day and say, right, I'll do it today.
Yeah.
The regulator will actually write to you 12 months before your staging date, and it's a one-piece letter to you, and it can be easily missed.
Right, absolutely.
And then effectively the next time you'll hear from them will be 3 months before.
Yeah.
So that's your kind of early warning and last-minute warning.
Okay, because I have heard, I think, it's not an urban myth, that some firms have already been fined for missing their dates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And the fines are, they're enforced to ensure compliance. That's the major thing about auto-enrolment. Each company is responsible for their own auto-enrolment solution, and there is a compliance process to follow. You need a green tick in your compliance box at staging date or just after staging date. Once you have staged, there is something called certification.
Right. Is it possible to explain what staging actually means in general terms?
Okay, it's the day that your pension has to be in place where your workforce is assessed to make payment.
Right, okay.
So a scheme has to be set up prior to that.
Right.
There are, with everything, there are caveats to whether you have to have a scheme, whether you don't have to have a scheme. But effectively, you need to take stock way before that date.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, you need to think about this and get sorted and in place and set up and ready.
Even to the extent of what your scheme might look like.
Mm-hmm.
There are some very basic schemes. There are some very complex schemes.
Mm.
Do you want to offer a very basic scheme to your staff, or do you want to employ some employee benefits and actually get people engaged because you have a decent pension within your company? Over the last 2-3 years, a lot of the providers that were in the market 3 years ago are no longer in the market.
Mm.
The market is changing quite rapidly.
And getting saturated as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
Most of the providers that we talk to are either almost at or past saturation stage, where they just can't cope with too many more schemes.
I've heard that as well quite often, that people are going, whoa, can't do that anymore. Yeah. Mm.
And I went to a conference a few weeks ago where this was described as a tsunami. The idea of what's going to happen in quarter four 2016, so October onwards, there are over 200, or just under 250,000 firms that will need to stage in those 3 months.
Right.
At the moment, it's around about 25,000-30,000 a month. So there's a huge uplift into the market. So our advice is to get things ready early. The last thing you want to do is get towards, if your staging date is anywhere next year, a year after, is leave it to the last minute. If websites are saturated, it will take you hours and days to do it.
Absolutely. I mean, my understanding as well is that these staging dates, as given by the pensions regulator, the bigger companies have all been started first.
That's right.
And as we filter through, it gets down to the smaller and smaller businesses. Now, I would assume that, funnily enough, the smaller businesses have a bigger problem than the bigger businesses, because bigger businesses hire loads of people that sort all this kind of stuff out. Smaller businesses tend to be owner managed by people that are plumbers or electricians or, you know, website designers, and not admin people.
And they've also got to be careful they're not deemed to be advising their employees.
Absolutely.
Or equally discriminating.
Absolutely.
So it brings a whole host of other questions to the business that you didn't have six months ago.
Absolutely. And I think, so what that sounds like to me is a recipe for, if you don't get in quickly, you could actually get quite badly caught, because the smaller businesses are going to want more and more advice. And as you've kind of identified, there are people that just can't handle it anymore because they, you know, just peaked out with the amount of business they've got. You see this all the time with small businesses as well, with things like the year-end tax and the self-assessment. People leave it until 2 minutes to midnight on the cut-off date, and then suddenly find they needed a piece of data that you can't get because the office is shut, you know. Leaving stuff till the last minute is a terrible, terrible, terrible way to do anything. But
or
it's
like
understandable.
Coming into the studio 1 minute
exactly.
to 30 seconds to 1 p.m.
Exactly. Yeah. Because we would never.
You're in the sun,
we would
you?
Never do that. We would never lay outside sunbathing until 30 seconds to airtime, would we?
The
we
dentures.
Would not do that. No, absolutely we wouldn't. Okay. So basically, people have got to start thinking about this. Even if their station date is 18 months away, now's the time to think about it. Now's the time to start looking around what they can do. Without any specific advice, though, because otherwise you can't do that, what are the kind of options that people have? I mean, presumably, if one was daft enough, you could try and do all this yourself.
Yeah, you can. There's lots that we call them free-to-air pension schemes. So effectively, you can go on any number of pension providers that an employer can do it themselves.
Mm.
You know, one of the government services, Nest, National Earning Savings Trust. You can do that yourself. Effectively, your payroll will talk to the pension. So again, there's a payroll issue. Accountants have got to be involved in this. But equally, it depends on what you actually want to provide at the end of somebody's working life in terms of a pension scheme. We've just seen the advent of the new pension regulations with freedom of pension choices. most of these pension, sorry, some of these pensions may not be able to, some of these pensions may not be able to facilitate in the Freedom of Pension Act.
Right, okay.
So you may have to do something later on to actually do what you want to do at the outset.
Right, okay. So basically, there's a lot of planning and pre-work that needs to go on here, and you need to think through what you're doing.
Well, in addition to that, you might need to start thinking about your payroll in itself. Mm. If you're going to reward people 3% bonus pay rise, for example, or structuring bonuses, etc., it's based on your total income. If you don't stage for a couple of years, you could be giving someone a pay rise for three for the next two, and then you've got to pay a pension contribution based on that pay rise rather than as it is today. So there are other things you need to
consider. So there's a lot of logistical planning that needs to go into this as well, because there are costs involved in this, because an employer has to pay into this. Because my understanding, again, is just at a general level, that there's a contribution from the employee, but there's, as always, a bigger contribution from the employer.
Other way round.
The other way round.
Yeah, so effectively the initial contribution is 1% from the employee and 1% matched from the employer. Hmm. That then increases and it will go 2% from the employer, 3% from the employee, so 5% overall. And in 2018 it will end up as 5% from the employee and 3% from the employer. There are other considerations in that, such as things like salary sacrifice, where you can save some national insurance maybe for you and your employee, corporation tax issues. Mm. So yeah, there's lots. The subject is very, very broad and very, very long.
Absolutely.
And it's getting the right. It's getting the right solution to actually get you that tick in the box and to do all the things that you want to do for your staff.
Yeah. So basically, you need to get some good advice from someone that's qualified to give that advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just on that, as you identified it there, Steve, that sliding scale, is that a pre-published sliding scale or is that commensurate on something?
No, that's published on the pension website.
So that is going to happen no matter
yes,
what.
Yes.
It's a sliding scale of charges that will happen over the next few years that that's those it. Contributions will go up. Until it reaches, was it 5% you said was the ultimate?
The plan is at the moment 2018 will be at 8%, so five and a three mix.
Right.
And from an employer point of view, if your employee doesn't want to contribute, you don't have to contribute.
Right.
But from an employee's point of view, if you want to contribute, your employer has to contribute.
Right, okay.
And you can opt out as an employee.
Yeah.
And again, one of the stipulations in the scheme at the moment is that if you do opt out, you have to be opted back in 3 years' time.
Right.
And it's getting the right system in place to actually, you know, who keeps a diary, who's got a diary for 2018, to actually put somebody back in.
When you say you opt back in 3 years' time, does that mean I give you the option again?
Yes.
But you don't have to take it, but you might take it. So for instance, you might say, I don't want to opt in now. And in 3 years' time, you go, blimey, I missed out there. I want to opt in next time you ask.
From an employer's point of view, you have to, if somebody is auto-enrolled, so they meet the criteria, they will go in on the first date of staging. So
yep.
you go in on that date, you have 28 days in which to opt out. And if you opt out and do nothing, that's fine. But in 3 years' time, your employer has to opt you back in for you then to opt out again.
Right.
And in 3 years after that, and 3 years after that, and 3 years after that.
Do you guys ever get confused by this?
Definitely.
Constantly. You must be constantly brushing up, though, all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. It defies me how politicians come up with this kind of stuff and expect people to cope with it, but there you go.
They seem to tweak things on a constant basis.
Mm.
And also, you know, the big companies have gone in. They're fairly simple. As you said, they've got big HR departments, big payroll departments, big accountancy departments.
Yeah.
When you get to owner-managers, maybe there's one, maybe two, and their husband and wife running a company.
Yeah.
They haven't got that resource.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, going back to your comment about a plumber, would a plumber be better giving it away for somebody else to do so they can go and earn some money plumbing
and
do what they know what they're
absolutely.
Doing?
Absolutely, yeah.
Or actually try and fudge it themselves and get it wrong and get some nasty fines?
Yeah, and still not end up with a scheme that works.
Yeah
exactly, yeah, okay. On that, you did make reference, I think, earlier to what you call free-to-air systems. Presumably there are paid systems as well. There are paid systems of things that you know that you can engage in at all kinds of levels.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, if an employer wanted to engage us, we would go through all the options available to them, including what we would charge, how we would charge, when we would charge, and effectively what they would expect to receive from us for that charge. again, I have clients that want total engagement, whereby they want me to come in and sit with their staff every few months or every month even. And I've got other companies that just want us to set up the scheme and disappear.
Right.
We can do both.
Okay.
But cool. We will give everyone the option of, you know, this is a free-to-air service. This is something you could go and do. This is kind of a medium, a middle-of-the-road solution. And this is what we would then do if you were to engage us on a company level.
Sure. Okay.
I think additionally, the thing that I think we pride ourselves on is also we don't just give company stroke corporate advice. We give personal advice, so we can actually tailor somebody's auto enrollment need to their own personal need.
Yeah.
Most companies are run by, you know, we usually get to talk to the director. The director is the company. The company is the director.
Mm.
Why should the auto enrollment solution be different to their own personal solution? Why shouldn't it be in kilter?
Yeah, absolutely.
I was also going to add in there as well that the Federation of Small Businesses has got its own pension scheme that has been specifically set up for FSB members.
Right.
You can phone the FSB for more information about that, or we are actually authorised to discuss that with people as well.
Okay, so they could talk to you and you can talk about the FSB scheme, or they can find out about the FSB scheme through the FSB's website or whatever.
It's worth pointing out that Squirrel Financial Planning are members of the Best Practice IFA Group Limited, which is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Indeed.
So
blimey.
What did you have to do to... do that?
Years and years of
they got
exams.
It printed on their cards. Oh, I see.
What did you have to do to be authorised?
Years of training to get the exams, and then the system was all changed under the RDR rules in 2013, when the systems moved towards fees, higher levels of qualifications and higher CPD levels,
sure,
which has to be maintained at 35 hours a year. So you have to make sure your knowledge is there. As we've said already, rules are always changing. We've just seen the advent of FAD, or the freedom of access to pensions, which is it's made pensions sexy again, is my strapline. Put them in the press. Made them more flexible. Think pensions, think yoga.
Downward dog. But it's also about peace of mind, isn't it? Having that IFA authority.
Yeah, we are
warranties.
Because we are authorised, we are liable for any advice we give, and also for the advice we don't give.
Yeah.
So seek advice from somebody that is authorised by the FCA. There's a lot of employee benefits people out there. They don't have to be registered because they're not given advice, they're transacting. Mm. But are you then getting the right scheme that suits your company?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't expect you to comment on this. This is just one of my rants. One of the problems from people that aren't in the industry, i.e. those of us that are desperately trying to run a business, one of the problems is knowing what on earth we're supposed to do with a lot of this stuff, you know, because whilst people in the industry are fully aware of what's going on and what qualifications they need, us outside haven't got a clue. I currently have a SIP, yeah, and they change the rules on that so often. I happily had an advisor in my SIP for over 15 years, and then they wrote to me recently and said, we can't advise you anymore. The rules have changed. Sorry, you got to go somewhere else. What?
I think,
and that just annoys me.
I think for people outside, you know, I'm one of these people that when I get approached by various companies, I always look at their website, because that's always a really good place to start.
Mm.
Scroll down to the bottom of the front page, and it will say on there whether somebody is regulated or not.
Yeah.
If they're not regulated, the advice that they give you isn't advice as such. It's guidance.
It's an opinion.
it's you know, you are transacting that yourself.
Yeah.
With no backup from the FCA at all.
Yeah.
Whereas whenever we do anything, whether that be personal, corporate, as Jane said, our licence is on the line. We give advice and recommendations, and you know, it is fully documented why we've done it and why we haven't done things in certain circumstances.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Look, we could talk about this for a long time, but sadly, we're near the end of that section. As you said, the FSB operate their own scheme, and you can find out about that. You guys are one of the authorised people for helping people with that scheme and other schemes. If people want to find out more about the FSB scheme, then they can go to the FSB website. There is a link to the FSB website on the Kent Business Radio website. But also, give us a shout for your website if people want to find out about you and what you guys do.
Well, we are Squirrel Financial. We are Nutty About Finance.
.com.
They're the nuts.
The website is squirrelfinancial.com.
Fantastic.
Can I just add one thing?
Yeah.
Later in May, there are two seminars. That the FSB are holding specifically around auto enrolment.
Fantastic.
They will be on the website shortly. If anybody's got any questions about where and when and how, look on the website. If not, give the FSB a call at the Maidstone office.
Yeah, what will happen, actually, we have a section on the Kent Business Radio website called FSB News, and as those seminars are published, we will put them on there as well, so people will find out about it as they let us know where they are and what the booking details are.
You're going to be inundated, in other words.
thanks for reminding us of that, because that is something important.
And I will be presenting at both of those. So.
Okay, fine, so people can come along then and talk to you at one or both of those events. Stephen, Jane, thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show this morning. I'm completely out of kilter today. It's this afternoon, not this morning. Stephen, Jane from Squirrel Finance, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon on the Business Bunker Show. Absolute pleasure to talk to you. Do stay with us for a while longer. But for the moment, Stephen, Jane of Squirrel Finance, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think... You can read an email, Jules.
Well, this is one about my fabulous Snake Hips colleague. He's going to be doing a Zumbathon, Paul Andrews this is, on Saturday, May the 9th at Aylesford Sports College, 1 to 3pm. The Twitter handles that you might need are at Herbs Palsy Group, that's E-R-B-S for sugar, Palsy, P-A-L-S-Y, Group, and at KDC Sorg, S-O-R-G. So this is Saturday, May the 9th, 1 to 3
That'll be KDCS Org.
What did I say?
KDC Sorg.
Why can't I say it like
that? It's the Kent Deaf Children Society Organisation, KDCS Org.
Well, I could say it KDC Sorg.
Yeah.
No, I see where you're coming from, though. Org. Anyway, as I was saying, Saturday, May the 9th, this is your diary day, at Aylesford Sports College, 1 to 3pm. This is supported by Jobs in Kent and Tesco.com and also Channel Radio. You can join in on the day in the Zumbathon, £10 entry. And if you'd like to sponsor Paul Andrews, you can go to uk.virginmoneygiving.com.
Sponsor me now.
/ Paul Andrews BB. Now, what are they sponsoring you for? Is it to wear a tutu?
Yeah, basically.
Or to not wear a tutu?
No. I thought it should be to not, but they want the girls wanted it to be. What they're saying is, the more money we raise, the more outlandish outfit I will wear to lead the Zumbathon.
Okay.
That is the deal. At the moment, and as somebody pointed out, if all of my followers, all of them, donated just £1, both of those charities would never need to raise money again, ever. So please just give us a pound.
Yeah, a pound, exactly.
Yeah. Lovely. UK Virgin Giving / Paul Andrews BB.
Well, Scoff and Quaff is going
to... Give us a pound, just a pound,
to
you.
It's going to give you more than a pound.
Buy one, get one free. Pound.
And see, that's where you need the laser hair removal before you do that.
Is that right?
And I would start on the upper thigh.
Is that right? Okay. But do you know what we're going to do now?
Tunage.
We're going to play a bit of tunage, and then when we come back, we're going to speak to our next guest.
Let's play. What are you playing?
Hey, what do you reckon?
Oh, is it Fleetwood Mac?
It is Fleetwood
Mac. Now there's a change.
Now there's a thing, isn't it?
Didn't you have a frisson on with her one?
I wanna be with you. there are small business owners like you claiming back on average £46,000 from the government. You see, the government wants to reimburse companies for innovation. What does this mean for you? Well, put simply, if your staff have spent time and resources developing your business, you could claim back cash. We're RIFT. We're specialists in preparing claims for small businesses. To find out from RIFT if your business is eligible, visit innovationreward.co.uk.
Jobsinkent.com. Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
Welcome back to the Business Bunker Show on this Tuesday, April the 14th, with me, Paul Andrews, and her, Jill Serkin. And she's got chocolate. Where'd you get chocolate from?
Well, this was sent to me by a fan. It's Venezuelan.
By a fan?
Venezuelan gold.
A fan?
It's just a little dark chocolate to keep me perky throughout the show.
Oh, you need to be perky. It's Venezuelan, it says on there.
And then Frankie's. You know where you go to, yep, Frankie's Farm? They've sent me this gorgeous salted caramel, sea-salted caramel spread.
Well, not another one. She had a pot of that last week, yeah, and she sat there, yeah, with the lid off and just licked the jar until it was empty.
The jar.
It's a whole jar of sea salt caramel, and she had the whole thing on its own with her finger dipping it in the jar while we were on
air. I need to keep my spirits up,
something like that.
Yeah,
anyway, enough already. It's an absolute pleasure to welcome our next guest onto the Business Bunker Show, Mr. Derek Taylor of Information Protection Solutions. Derek, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much for joining us, and it's an absolute pleasure to have you here, and thank you so much for being the show sponsor this week, which we much appreciate. Why don't you tell the listener a little bit about Information Protection Solutions and the kind of things and the kind of work that you do?
Thank you, Paul. In some ways, we're not dissimilar to Squirrel, in as much as we provide a range of solutions to the business community, mm-hmm, which centres around ensuring that they remain compliant within the manner in which they store their information.
Okay. So a lot of people don't really kind of understand this, and also a lot of businesses talk about it without actually understanding it, which is Data Protection Act and all that kind of stuff. Can you give us a little bit of an overview of some of, you know, I don't expect you to do chapter and verse on all 12,000 pages of the legislation, but give us a bit of an overview of some of the things that an average kind of business ought to be thinking about in terms of compliance with storage and disposal of documentation and information data.
Okay. By and large, there are 8 principles of data protection.
Right.
They cover a range of issues, but in essence, it's about what you do with any information as a business that you're storing, how you treat that information, what that information is. And it revolves a lot around your staff details and supplier details and HR details, that type of thing.
Right, okay.
In broad theme, you should retain your information for up to 7 years.
Yep,
so accountants, okay, insurance companies, IFAs, whoever.
Yeah.
There's a kind of rolling seven-year period of retention.
Okay. When you say you retain it, is that original documents, or could you, I'm showing my age here, but could you save it as a microfiche or something like that? I knew I'd make him laugh at that.
You have to retain it in its original format. Mm. Most of which is paper.
Right.
Because we're generating paper,
yeah, absolutely,
every single day. So one of the services we provide is an outsourced archive storage business, right, for argument's sake.
Okay.
And what that means in English is effectively that we will take all of your paper information, keep it in our warehouse, and when you need it, it comes back to you as and when you need that information.
Mm-hmm.
That's on a 7-year turnaround. At the end of the 7 years, you should ask us to destroy it for you.
Okay.
We then certificate that back to you to say that this information has now been destroyed, and that effectively is your insurance policy.
Right, okay.
So that if anything happened or came out or whatever after that, it's our problem, not yours.
Okay.
You've acted responsibly as the employer.
Okay. Let's just kind of step through some of that. So I go, right, my 7 years are up, or I've got a... Presumably, this is a rolling basis, yeah, that you're going to do this because you've been in business 9 years, and the first lot of your data is coming up for disposal, and you want to clear some space in your filing cabinet. So otherwise, you're going to have to buy a bigger office. So I call you and I go, Derek, do the business, mate. And so what happens from there? You come and collect the data from me? Step me through the process.
At that point, at the end of the seven-year cycle, we, in theory, should have the data in our warehouse. It should be things that we are storing.
No, that's fine. Sorry, there's two of us trying to talk to Derek at the same time.
What you're saying is, what I was wondering when you just said that was, after the six or seven, is it 7 years?
Seven.
If somebody didn't contact you, would you contact them, or would you just leave it rotting in your...
That's a very, very good point, yes. Jules.
Thank you.
We have a number of clients, none of which we'll mention here, who haven't quite got their act together.
Right.
At the end of the seven-year period, to destroy the things
flies.
That we have in store. We carry on storing. We carry on storing for them on that basis.
Right, okay.
And delivering and retrieving according some of that information.
Sure. Because it's not mandatory. You don't have to destroy it on 7 years. It's just that you can after 7 years.
But what I mean is, would you phone them, give them a tingle and remind them?
And some of the time it makes no difference whatsoever.
So they just ignore you.
So I'm interested in the destruction process, though. Because you said you certificate it as well. Yep. So you go, right, we took your stuff, we chucked it on a bonfire, here's your certificate, this is what we did. How do you actually destroy it?
So at the end of that period of time, everything is shredded down to less than 4 millimetre shred. The box, the paper, the paper clips, the files, the whole
lot.
So
you haven't got one of those little sort of Lidl shredders that I've got?
No, we tend to run out of those quite quickly. everything is shredded. As I say, down to less than 4 mil.
Right.
That is then recycled within the UK and by and large ends up as toilet rolls or chocolate box corrugated
so
linings.
So if you're on the loo and you're having a little, you might find somebody's telephone number on there that bypassed the...
Somebody's bank statement.
And their postal code.
Or hopefully you haven't, of course. Yeah.
I love that.
I tell you, I saw a YouTube... I don't know, I'm sad. I saw a YouTube video the other day of a shredding machine, though, where they actually put a filing cabinet in it and it just chopped the filing cabinet up.
Well, really?
Yeah, really.
Are they that strong?
Well, this was a big industrial breaker's yard.
It depends what you're trying to do, obviously. But the point about the shredding and ultimately the certification is that that's your insurance policy from your perspective.
Right.
And also from your CSR, your corporate social responsibility perspective,
you
know that things have been recycled in the UK. It's cut down your carbon footprint. It's enhanced your green credentials,
Talking of recycling, we have a very complicated system, I think, in Whitstable now. We have... three bins, so my kitchen is just full of bins basically. We've got cardboard, we've got glass and plastics in another one, and then rubbish, and then food waste.
But Canterbury City Council have a special collection for Jules, though. There's
mostly
Jules,
the bottles.
There's Jules waste, which is mostly bottles, empty Prosecco bottles.
But this...
They have a special truck that comes every Wednesday and cleans the first 9 crates away from the beginning of the week, and then they call again at the end of the week.
That's just my breakfast.
And that's her breakfast prosecco.
But what I was saying before my co-presenter interrupted me rudely was that I wash everything out and do it all. And when you've got people staying with you, you turn into some sort of don't put that there, don't put that there. And this week they were rummaging through my bin, and they took out a crisp packet, and because of the crisp packet, they left the whole dustbin, because apparently crisp packets are not recyclable, and then they put a notice on it, swung it on there, and refused to take it. And so now I'm going to ring them, because that note they put on my bin is not recyclable. And that got my goat.
Oh dear. Canterbury City Council, just a little tad of a warning here. don't annoy Jill. She's been at the Prosecco again. She will be down there.
And don't get me started on the parking charges.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so I'm fascinated.
Coming back to Derek, who doesn't empty the bins for the council.
Not yet, anyway.
No.
So where do you take it all for recycling, or do they collect it? Or
We shred it either on our premises or at our contractor, effectively.
Mm. Yeah. Right. I want to talk a bit now about other types of disposal, because increasingly, although, I'm smiling because I'll tell you this anyway. A thousand years ago, I worked for a rather large bank, and I was head of technology. And this was an awful long time ago, and it was at the start when people kept saying, we're going to bring in the paperless office, we're going to bring in the paperless office. And the board said to me, Paul, we want you to do a paperless office. project. And I went, not a problem. The following Monday, I rang them and I said, right, it's done. And they went, really? How did you do that? I said, didn't print any reports. That was it. Done. And they went, don't be ridiculous. And I went, no, got no paper now. But increasingly, we have stuff, sensitive stuff, that isn't on paper, primarily on disk or whatever. So how do we handle that?
We can help you have the less paper office. You won't get the paperless office. The beauty of the paperless office is that it creates a lot of paper generally, which works well for us. But on the less paper office, we have a range of document management systems, keep life easy just for the moment, which enable you to process workflow.
Right, okay.
So you can do away with most paper in your office while still retaining access via the internet or the cloud.
Right. Okay.
And that's great, actually, for a small startup business. You know, the point of entry isn't colossal.
Okay.
And if you do it at outset, obviously you've then got a program to work on going forward, effectively.
Okay. Let's say, for instance, I've got some sensitive data that is stored on a computer disk or in the cloud or wherever I've stored it, and I no longer need to keep that record for 7 years. How do I go about disposing that? Can I just delete it? How does that work?
Well, excuse me, sorry. You can never actually remove all the information from computer hard drives.
Exactly.
For starters. You just can't.
Can't, no, absolutely.
People often say to me, well, we'll take it to the garden and we'll put a hammer through it or whatever. Yeah. That is not ultimately the corporate way of doing things, perhaps.
Your jewels out in the back garden with flamethrower. Yeah.
So, ideally, you would contact us. We would take your hard media, either the hard drive itself or the whole system, laptops, mobiles, tablets, etc., PCs. And we, again, a bit like the paper information, they can all be shredded.
Right.
And again, we can get those shredded down to dust, effectively.
Okay.
So that at that point, that has gone. That is never going to be reconstituted.
That's
just not going to happen again.
And
in the same way as with the paper information, that's then certificated back to you to say this is what's happened.
Right.
And again, that's your insurance policy. Right. And obviously, with most companies replacing IT every 18 months or so now, what are you currently going to do with all your computers? You can't keep them on your premises for very long, and you're certainly not going to take them to the tip.
Right.
So there does come a point when you've got to address this issue.
Right.
And again, every business has this issue of end-of-life cycle hardware.
Absolutely. And I want to talk to you about that if I can. I'm not sure if it's something that you do or don't do, or I'm sure you can recommend it if you don't. In the past, on the Business Bunker Show, we've had people from organisations like Computers for Africa, and they ask people to donate their old computer equipment. But one of the problems is a lot of organisations have got computers they don't want to use anymore, but they're really wary of doing anything like that because they're just not sure, you know, what data's on them and how to deal with that. Do you offer any kind of data wiping service which doesn't involve destroying the actual machine?
Yes, we can do. But most people we've spoken to about that ultimately decide to destroy
the machine.
I think in this day and age, you just cannot possibly risk sending a machine off somewhere not knowing that it's totally clean or dead, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're absolutely right. It is one of those things that the charities struggle with perennially is people go, well, we've got hundreds of old computers, but you can't have any because we're going to smash them to bits. And that's one of those problems. But as an organization, does IPS offer data cleaning type services?
Yes, we can. That's a bespoke service, really. That requires sitting down and conversation.
Yes
is the short answer.
And what's that exactly on that file?
Indeed.
And should I open it or what?
It strikes me that, Derek, you're quite hands-on with your business from what you're saying.
Oh, yeah, very much. I mean, it's a good way of continuing to build a business, stay in touch with it and your customers, of course. And every customer, whilst the essence of their requirement is the same, obviously they're all different.
I wonder what she was trying to say about you for a minute. I thought she was making some kind of reference to Ninja Turtles.
In a very odd mood today.
Didn't they have someone called Shredder?
I don't know. I never watched Ninja Turtles.
Yeah,
my kids had the pyjamas. I actually never watched it.
Yeah, Shredder.
I used to watch Den and Angie.
Yeah.
When they were watching Ninja Turtles.
Okay. Did they shred stuff?
Probably.
Each other.
Probably true. Okay. let's just recap all of those kind of things, because there's a lot of information that you told us there. There are some compliance needs where we need to keep official documentation and other types of documentation for up to 7 years, after which we can, should we so choose, to destroy it. We don't have to. It's not mandatory. We can just leave it in storage forever with you. Let them see it. Yeah, absolutely. But once we get to the point where we say, hey, listen, let's get rid of this, let's make some space. When you're asked to dispose of something, presumably, is there any form of what, can you even do this? Can you actually say, hold on a minute, you can't get rid of that. It's only 6 years and 3 months old? Or
if we have that information at outset, then the answer to that would be yes. But at that point, obviously, the onus is on the client to say that this is 7 years old or 8 years old and they want to get rid of it.
Right.
We would be confirming what they've asked us to get rid of first.
Right.
So we would send them a list.
Right.
And then they would confirm by email that that list is accurate.
Right, okay.
And then as a double check, we would be going through the boxes at the end of the day, making sure that the list marries up the contents, and assuming it does, off we go.
Okay, cool. So there's a bit of a check that says, hey, are you sure you wanted box A, because that's only 2 years old?
Yeah.
And they go, oh, no, I didn't mean A. I mean box eight or whatever. Okay. So that's disposal, and then you certificate that. Yep. So basically, once you've disposed of it, you give them a certificate that says this has been correctly disposed of. You are now fully compliant. If anybody moans about this, it's not your fault anymore. It's now my fault because I did this, and I take full responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. Effectively what they're buying, is that insurance policy at the end
right.
of the day.
Right, okay. Is there any particular, in your business itself, I'm assuming that there are certain businesses that are very data intensive, and I'm assuming people like lawyers and stuff like that are would be big users of your service? Or?
So lawyers, solicitors, accountants.
Medical.
Insurance. Right. But then it mushrooms out. It's any business.
Mushroom business.
Because every business is generating paper, for starters. Everybody is retaining information.
Yeah.
And a lot of that information is customer-based, so it's names, addresses, dates of birth, bank accounts, that type of thing.
Yeah. We see, I own Jobs in Kent, for those that don't know, and we have a huge database of CVs, obviously, so we're heavily regulated by data compliance with the information that we keep on, because people send us unsolicited CVs, and we keep them in an electronic format, and we have to be very careful what we do with those, obviously. So, absolutely.
Derek, what would you say to companies that are perhaps a bit laissez-faire about, you know, and they think they can get rid of it themselves?
I think the overriding thing to that is don't, because you're not getting that certificate, and you're not you haven't been indemnified,
absolutely,
and therefore you open yourself up to all sorts of exposure.
One
of the drivers of this market at the moment is the penalties that the Information Commissioner's Office, or the ICO, can bring to bear, which is an independent body, reports directly to the government, and up to about 3 or 4 years ago, what they could really do was relatively minimal. Now they have the ability to fine directors up to £500,000.
Wow.
And up to 10 years imprisonment.
Wow.
So it's suddenly become a very serious issue.
Yeah.
And
she's been hiding data. I know. She's been hiding data.
So you know, when you see these stories about the politician left his laptop in the taxi or whatever, or some borough council had their medical records dumped on the local tip because they went the cheap route.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's the road to either of those two sanctions.
Right, absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, what about these pensioners that have been, you know, called up, cold called, because their data has been passed on with illnesses and all sorts of things?
Well, the ICO currently, that's interesting you should mention that, have just fined, I won't mention the company, but they have just fined a call centre revolving around that situation because of the way that the call centre, A, obtained the information.
Right.
B, what they did with it, i.e. ringing people at all sorts of hours, etc. And C, actually what they did to get rid of the data when they had finished with it.
Yeah.
What did they do?
I think the safe thing to say is they threw it away.
But there was a famous guy called Benny the Bin, if anybody's heard of Benny the Bin. And Benny the Bin worked for most of the major newspapers. And when any story was about to break, his job was to go around to various celebrities' house and go through their dustbins. And that's exactly what he did. And you would not believe the kind of stories that they found in people's dustbins. And Benny the Bin actually made millions of pounds flogging stuff he got out of people's bins to the newspapers. You've not heard of Benny the Bin?
No.
Really?
No.
Yeah.
I've heard of the wooden tops.
And no.
Little weeds.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't on children's
Benny
TV.
The Bin.
Benny the Bin. Benny the Bin. Blimey. Absolutely. So, Derek's absolutely right. You know, it sounds easy. You know, I'll set fire to that, or, you know, I'll bury it in the garden or something. But the issue that I think that Derek has succinctly put to you, and you need to think about businesses out there, is by getting it done professionally, you have an approved, authenticated certification that says this was disposed of. If you buried it in the back garden, chopped it up and put it in your bin, fed it to your rabbits, you have no way of proving that.
Because they could get it out the other end of the rabbit, even.
Well, I wasn't even going to go that route.
Like a little pellet.
Yeah. No, but the point is that you can't prove you disposed of something.
Right.
That is the single biggest thing, is you can't prove you disposed of it. Mm. And if something happens and somebody says, no, it was you that gave my data, you have no way of saying you didn't. Yeah, because you can't produce it, because you probably did bury it or burn it, but you can't prove it. And that's bad news, really. Cool. Derek, thank you for that. Thank you so much for joining us on the Business Bunker Show. Absolute pleasure to hear from you. Can you give us a shout out for your website so that people can go in, have a look, find out what you do, and find out more about what it's all about?
Thank you, Paul. All the W's, information-protectionsolutions.co.uk.
Cool. That's information-protection-solutions.co.uk. There is a full link on the Kent Business Radio website to Derek's website, and that will remain there for some time. And you can see that you can click on his logo as well, which is IPS, which is a nice blue, red and white logo. And that will take you through to Derek's website. So, Derek, thank you so much for talking to us about that today. Absolute pleasure to welcome you onto the Business Bunker Show. We're fairly much at a halfway point. I think what we'll do now, Jules, we'll play a little bit more tunage.
Not more of Stevie Nicks, surely.
Paul Andrews with the Business Bunker.
What you got? Oh, a little bit of James Bond. Lovely. Pussy galore. Thank you.